In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. I'll be speaking with renowned guitarist Nils Lofgren. He's been with the E Street Band for a long while now, but he began his career with Neil Young and Crazy Horse. He also fronted his own band, Grin. His latest solo album is Mountains, and it features our recent coolest song of the world, Ain't the Truth Enough. I'll play some of that now, followed by my chat with Nils on your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I wonder where you've been. The trouble you stepped in. You come home drunk on wine, scaring your wife and child. My God, what did you do? Ain't the truth enough? Ain't the truth enough for you? Me and the truth will always carry us through.
Mighty Manfred with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage. And my guest today for our coolest conversations is musician, songwriter, godfather of the guitar, the minister of heart and spirit, Nils Lofgren. His new album is Mountains, and it features this week's coolest song of the world, Ain't the Truth Enough. How are you, Nils?
I'm great, Manfred. It's good to talk to you.
Good speaking with you again as well. I know you've been hard at work this summer, touring in Europe these past several weeks with the E Street Band. The 28th, now it's the 28th. You've wrapped those shows up. You start again August the 9th. You're stateside at Wrigley Field in Chicago. You're 72 years old. What attraction is there to you about still playing out on the road?
Well, you know, it's this September's 55 years on the road for me. And speaking of the great town of Chicago, I was born there on the south side. Lived there for about 9 years before my dad took a job in Washington, D.C. But, you know, not to speak for everyone, but I think it's a pretty safe bet. And after about 15 years on the road, unless you get some spiritual hit and kind of some healing going on, playing in front of people, you get off the road. Because it's really not a great way to live. So 55 years down the road, and my bandmate Stevie, we all are getting something out of it past the music. And it's just like a very, I call music the sacred weapon for the planet. And by far my favorite thing is to perform. And to walk out with this band, well, geez, it's, it's like playing a Super Bowl, but every gig's a hometown crowd. And on top of that, you're guaranteed to win. You're just working on the point spread. That's kind of like how it feels with Bruce and the band. So I'm thrilled to be out here doing it. Yeah, I miss the hell out of Amy and home. But, you know, I get to go back now for a few days, and we'll be on tour in the States from here till Christmas, so I'll get to zip home more. But I couldn't be more grateful for the shows and the opportunity to be out here with the band.
You mentioned 55 years doing stuff out on the road. Was Grin your first touring band?
Yeah. In 68, I hit the road with Grin. Kicked around, took a while to get a record deal, made 4 albums, continued on as a solo artist, which I didn't really want to do. I love being in bands, but, you just put bands together that everyone's contributing in. And I was really young. I was 18, living with David Briggs, Neil Young's producer, in Topanga Canyon, driving from his house up to Neil Young's, in the hills of Topanga making the After the Gold Rush record with a remote truck. And I still remember saying to David, wow, it's nice not to be the band leader once in a while. Because, you know, there's a lot of non-musical issues for any band leader. And they all go away when you're just in a great band. So I recognized that early on. And when I was blessed with so many opportunities with Ringo, you know, Neil Young, E Street, Bruce, I knew they were good for my spirit, for my musical and spiritual soul. And I continue to say yes and be in many great bands. And here I am 55 years later. But I learned that lesson at 18 working with Neil Young.
Wow. Well, you know, so you're just doing stuff in Europe, and I'm not sure if people realize, really think about this. You know, I'll go out and do shows on the road, and people will say to me, oh, man, all the places you've been, all those great, all the great places you've been and all the things you've seen, when really your time is just looking at the inside of another bar and you're trying as hard as you can just to get to the next gig. This time in Europe, I mean, you guys were playing and, you know, there's a day off, maybe a couple of days off in between shows a lot of the time. Were you able to see any sights for like the first time? This, you know, particular not, tour or not?
Amy's with me. We'll try to go out. We catch museums, go do a little bit of that. But we've been doing that together for 27 years. Honestly, this tour, you know, it's more about, well, I got some free time. I'm going to go to the gym and, you know, work on my aching body. And I'm, you know, Bruce gives us all so much freedom. I'll change different licks in my Because of Night solo. I'll change things in my rhythms, songs or inversions. I mean, nobody knows that. But that's the freedom I have. So I do a little musical homework just to be engaged myself. And I don't do a lot of that sightseeing stuff without Amy with me. And of course, I've been doing that on and off. I started coming here in the late 60s. So plenty of that. I just more focus on getting ready for the shows.
Well, our coolest song in the world this week is Ain't the Truth Enough. It's the opening track to your new album, Mountains. You know, on the album, you've got another song, I guess an ode or tribute to Charlie Watts, Won't Cry No More. I've been thinking of drummers. This particular tune, Ain't the Truth Enough, has got Ringo Starr on it. How did you want? Well, first of all, tell me how the song came together and then how you got Ringo involved.
Yeah, you know, man, for the longest time in COVID, I was just like the houseboy taking dogs to the vet, taking the trash out. Amy runs the whole place brilliantly. And all I did was go jam to B.B. King, Albert King, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf. I didn't do anything professionally. I just played blues guitar. I was freaked out by COVID, politics, all of it, kind of flashed back to the 60s and the traumas of those days. But I finally said, you know what, you got to do something professionally. You can't tour. Write a record. Whatever comes out, write it. So I started pushing myself. Like that morning, I was up in the dark. I get up early at home. My 105-pound dog, Rose, gets up with me, only 2 years old. She company. And I had this idea, Ain't the Truth Enough. And I said, you know what, just tune I have this cool Martin D35 that Jimmy Kahn, the great actor, gave me as a gift. And I said, just tune it to an open G and use an open tuning, come up with something. I love the title, but I wanted to dig deeper and not have it be some superficial rock thing. And my wife, Amy's been, you know, fighting with the, you know, look, sticking up for women's rights, human rights, children's rights, fighting with the MAGAs, and she's a very fierce voice. So from the perspective of a woman, I wrote a song like a fierce mom and husband dealing with the husband's just home from the January 6th insurrection and how the story goes from her perspective. And so that freed me up to really go deep because, you know, there's been a war on women my whole life. It's getting worse. But I really felt great about the song. I got it done quick, which doesn't always happen. Called Ringo. Hey, would you consider playing on a song for me? He said, sure, send it. So I sent the demo because, of course, I didn't want to play on something I didn't like. And it was so great because the phone rang a day later and he just started singing it. Ain't the truth enough? There's Ringo singing my song. He said, yeah, I love it. Send it. I'll play on it. So that was a beautiful thing. Kevin McCormick played bass. And, of course, the great Cindy Mizell. I had to have a woman because it's from a woman's point of view. Killed the harmony, and we got a great record out of it.
Well, let's maybe focus for a second on Cindy. Now, she's worked with you for how long now?
Well, Cindy's done hundreds of shows. I mean, Amy and I first met Cindy. I was on tour in England doing my little club thing, and Amy and I went to see the Seeger Session Band. saw Bruce. I got up and sat in. But that's where we met a lot of, you know, a lot of the horn players were familiar friends. But that's where we met Cindy. We became good friends. Not long after, Cindy was singing with us, the Magic Tour, Working on a Dream, Wrecking Ball. So we did hundreds of shows together. Amy and Cindy got to be great friends. I love working with her and singing with her. No greater singer out there. So we're very close. And she finished the Billy Ocean Tour at a casino in California. Amy went and got her, drove her back to Scottsdale, and she hung out for 4 or 5 days, sang on 6 of the 10 tracks. But this was like, you know, the track I knew we needed her voice, and she killed it.
We also mentioned bass player Kevin McCormick. Now, with him and drummer Andy Newmark, I guess the last couple of records that featured those guys, obviously Andy's not playing on this cut on Ain't the Truth Enough because you got Ringo, but he is playing on other songs on the album, isn't he?
Yeah, we got Andy on a couple songs, which is great. We got Kevin on 4 songs. And, you know, classic. I mean, look, Ringo, forget everything else. He's an amazing drummer. He's also a Beatles. And, you know, Kevin put I said, look, before I send the track to Ringo, I want a bass on it. Kevin played a great bass with the caveat, no, after you get Ringo playing drums, you got to let me play bass again. So I played bass with Ringo. And of course, the answer is yes. I was honored to have people of this caliber on my record. It was a beautiful thing. Sent the final thing out. Ringo loved it. And here we are, man. It's coming out. And I hope people enjoy it. But it's one of my favorite tracks, of course. And it's nice to have friends like that to reach out to.
Well, some other friends you have on there, you got Neil Young and David Crosby making appearances, the late David Crosby. I think, gosh, it was back, I think 2019 is the first time we spoke, and you mentioned something about how you had recently been working with Neil Young and had recorded some new tracks or songs with him. Does any of that correlate with his vocal contribution to your song, Nothing's Easy? Or how did he get involved with it?
In the sense, you know, I mean, look, I go back 54 years with those guys. Mm. Met them on their first tour. I've been an honorary Crazy Horse alumni all these decades. Last 5 years, I've been back in the band. We made 3 albums. Rick Rubin produced the last one just a few months ago, early in the year, world record. So, you know, there's a camaraderie. Look, yeah, these people are like brothers to me. But going and making records, well, that's different. So there was a particular, you know, comfortability from continuing to make records and playing together on top of the friendship. And as soon as I started writing Nothing's Easy, again, the sun was coming up, Rose was with me, and I thought, oh yeah, man, this is going to be a good one. And as I was writing it, I thought, I got to ask Neil to sing on this. Same kind of thing with Richie, Ringo. Neil, would you listen to a song? I'd love you to sing if you're okay with it. Send him the track, said, love the tune, send it. I'll sing for you. So I just got really lucky to reach out to dear old friends. But of course, Manfred, making a few records and getting to see Neil more often, not only as a friend, but playing together the last 5 years, kind of helped that journey along too, I think.
Well, Nothing's Easy. That's also a tribute to your wife, Amy.
Yeah, you know, I'm one of these freaks. My mom and dad are gone, but I grew up with the best parents in the world. It was kind of like Leave It to Beaver, but even better. And, you know, everyone I talk to has trauma. I haven't talked to my sister. I hate my mom. I can't go to Thanksgiving. My wife had a lot of trauma growing up. A lot of my friends do. So I'm very lucky not to have dealt with that. But, you know, watching Amy dealing with, you know, being a growing up, having a son, having to make your own way, get away from a unsupportive family in New Jersey, West Orange, where she grew up. She's just kind of a badass. And I envision kind of like this Armageddon type craziness because the world is blowing up and, you know, everything's kind of bombed out and dark. And then through the crack in the cement, here's this beautiful rose, you know, or tulip. I'm sorry, the tulip in the middle of the road. It just metaphorically, as we were all struck, we all got PTSD from COVID, politics, what's going on, climate. So I just thought, you know, man, despite it all, how blessed am I to, you know, have found my partner for 27 years now. And the song went from there. And as I was writing it, I knew I had to ask Neil to sing it. And in the back of my mind, I was like, you got to you know, even though I'm a beginner pedal steel player, which, you know, I'm the swing guy in the East Street band, you don't need three guitar players on everything. And I knew I was going to put pedal steel, and Neil was kind enough to sing his ass off on it, and we got a cool tune.
Well, speaking of Amy a little bit more, she's listed as a co-producer on the album. Can you describe her role as producer? Is that in a traditional sense, or how?
No, it's not. It's more artistic in the sense, you know, Jamie Weddle, extraordinary engineer, came over. We'd work 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon, 4 or 5 days a week. So I had time to get away and check what I was doing. We tested, you know, I'd wear a mask unless I was singing. But for instance, like on Nothing's Easy, say, come out and listen to Neil. And she listens to it and she loves music. I mean, when we first 27 years ago started, you know, talking to each other and figuring out if we could make a go of it because we wanted to be serious about it. And we were honest, you know, instead of putting up the front, she's like, hey, I'm going to be a mom for life. I was like, I'm going to be a touring musician for life. So I started asking her about music because, of course, that's the hugest thing in my life. And right then and there, she recited the entire lyric to In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel. So I knew I had a music lover. And, you know, she's not impressed by fame or any of that, but she loves music. So she listened to that song and went, wow, you need to turn Neil up a little bit, I think. And that brush part is getting in the way for some reason. And, you know, she doesn't understand. But I thought, wow, I'm so wrapped up in the overview. And tips like that were helpful. In the great cover of, you know, I worked for months with the Howard University Gospel Choir, bless their souls. Their musical director, Reggie Golden, was amazing. And we got him on my one cover on the record, Back in Your Arms, the great Bruce Springsteen ballad. And we're sitting there all excited about it. Said, Amy, you got to hear the Howard Gospel Choir. And she comes out and listens. She goes, well, yeah, they're good. But I mean, it's kind of like they're the same. You need Cindy Mizell adding some soul spice inside the gospel choir. So it was a very valuable suggestion. Of course, Cindy did that. But, you know, you get so wrapped up in it. And then you get, oh, after months of work, we got the Howard Gospel Choir. How exciting. And you forget that maybe there's another element to add. And that's where Amy's so valuable. She's just a real fresh take. She's not in the music business. She loves music. And it's a very honest, fresh take anytime she hears anything. Whether I agree with all those suggestions or not, those are some great ones that really helped the record.
Well, the tune, We Better Find It, that's got a choir on it.
That's a nutty song, man. That's a song.
That's why I'm asking you about it.
It's kind of a nursery rhyme for adults, but it's kind of like, you know, we had all this, we thought we were like on the way to, you know, peace, love, understanding, compassion. What the hell happened? And it's more like I saw it from a children's point of view. Like, what the hell did you adults do with all this good shit we were working on as a civilization? And I got 40 kids at the Phoenix Children's Chorus to sing a couple times. They sang great. And I knew when I wrote it, it was a nutty song, but it just struck me, like, from a kid's point of view, like, what are you adults doing with all the good shit we were supposed to be working on? You're screwing it all up. So that's why I had, you know, a lot of kids singing on that, and they did a great job. And of course, there was one line in there, wise Ringo always says, peace and love. And I called him again, said, hey, would you listen to this? I want to have you. I put you because there's a million versions of Ringo saying peace and love.
Right.
So I put one in there. I said, would you listen and see if it's okay with you? I said, I'm saying peace and love. I said, yeah. I said, I don't need to hear it. Just do it. You have my permission. I'm Mr. Peace and Love. So that's what I'm saying. You go ahead, Nils. I don't have to check it or audition it. And, you know, a lot of kind of great help from dear friends like that meant a lot.
So, I don't recall the last time Neil Young and David Crosby appeared on the same album. Do you?
No. For my last album where I got these five or six songs Lou Reed and I wrote together.
Right.
Out. Lou and I talked about The Ones Left Behind and maybe doing something together. And then tragically, Lou passed. So I said, I got to get those done on my next record. And I did. But near the end of Blue with Lou, David, who we talk to regularly, he's actually a big fan of Amy's, and they were Twitter friends because they're both kind of fierce, sarcastic, intelligent. warriors for what's good. And he said, look, I want to sing on your record. Please pick a track. I said, well, I'm almost done, but I'd love to have you sing. So this album, I made sure I got a track to him. And interesting, it's kind of reminiscent of his music, his movie. I think it's called Remember My Name. But this was I Remember Her Name, story about me and Amy, because there were 15 years between our first and second meeting. And I got a second chance. So David sang beautifully on it. Of course, last thing I thought was, you know, he was talking about going on the road. He sounded great. He was singing great. So, of course, I thought he'd be around a lot longer. But I was thrilled to have him on that. And it just, you're right. I mean, Neil Young and David singing on my album. I don't know when the last time that happened, but it wasn't by design. It was just asking good friends to help me, and they did.
I'd like you to tell us a bit about this, if I'm pronouncing this right, the Rockality video series.
Oh, Rockality.
Rockality, thank you.
Yeah,
yes, like, tell me about the Rockality video.
Yeah, it's like reality, but it's Rockality. And, you know, man, for 55 years, I've been telling stories of my musical adventures. And, you know, there's some sports, there's some darkness, there's some silliness, hilariousness, but people seem to really enjoy them. And you ought to write a book. You ought to write a book. I'm not going to write a book. My heart's not in writing a book. I don't want to tell you about going to Louis Pasteur Elementary School in 3 feet of snow in Chicago. My heart's not in that. But the musical stories, I felt like I should take a shot at sharing them with more people than, you know, the five people that were at with dinner, the last dinner I had. And so it's a series of me telling these stories. I've told my whole life, maybe 20, 25 minute stories. Then I'll do a little jam musically at the end, and that'll be an episode. I'm going to stream them $5, a cup of coffee. If you like them, get the next one. And I'm going to start a series of just sharing my stories, get some feedback from the fans and see what they think about them, instead of just doing them with friends and family that I happen to be dining out with or visiting. And we'll see what people think.
And so they can find this the series, this Rockality series online.
It'll be nosoftman.com. There's a company that's going to stream them for us. It may be a few days past the release of the record Friday, but certainly by next week, we'll have, you know, four or five episodes from the Rockality series launched, and I'll keep taping them. And I'm looking forward to getting feedback from people too, because, you know, they might, inevitably, they'll have opinions, and that'll help guide me as I keep recording the stories.
Well, we can listen to one more track off the new album, Mountains, and I'd like us to hear Won't Cry No More for Charlie Watts. I think it came out as a single last month. Is that right?
Was
it?
Yeah, we put these pre-singles out to wind up to the record release.
Yeah.
That's new age now with social media. Got a great, you know, Missing Pieces PR company helped me out. Amy and I have a little mom and pop cattle track road records company, but MVD is a great distributor we've been working with for decades. But, you know, I mean, Amy and I went to see Tom Petty at Red Rocks because he didn't have a Phoenix date. Blew our minds, loved the show. We're both huge fans. Never occurred to us it'd be the last time we'd see him. We were cursing and yelling in our home for months of what a heartbreak it was to lose Tom. And when Charlie passed, I was inconsolable. I mean, you know, without the Beatles, Stones, and Hendrix, and everything that came along with them, I would not be here. I wouldn't be talking to you about my new record. Likely, I'd be at a Ramada Inn with an accordion and a Cordovox playing the top 40 in some ugly suit. So I owe a big debt of gratitude to them all. And they're these mythical, emotional characters. And when Charlie passed, I wasn't ready for it. You know, just messed me up. I started listening to a lot of Stones music, hoping between his muse and his playing, I could find some kind of comfort. And I kind of did, but I just was angry and upset. And I started writing this blues song, one riff, one chord. I'd never written a song like that in my life. It just was, you know, internalized it and started writing from there about the, you know, rage and the sadness, losing a hero like that. And again, you know, a blue, funky blues song, just me, you know, jamming in it. I got Cindy to sing the harmony, which, you know, nobody better for that. And I'm still upset about it. Of course we all are. But that's how that song came about.
What was this? There's some story that, you know, what Mick Taylor leaves the Stones, and there's this brief, I mean, this sort of, was it you that reached out to try and land the gig, or somebody, somehow Ron Wood had turned the position down, or it wasn't clear, and there was this kind of interim position, interim time frame where, hey, it could have been Nils Lofgren and the Stones.
Well, you know what happened was when Mick Taylor quit, I spun my car around Kensington, Maryland to go home, get on the phone and ask for audition. Halfway home, I spun it back and carried on with my chores because Ronnie Wood, who I knew through the Faces and the Truth album, I was following him around way back then. And I knew Ronnie Wood was the guy, you know, he's Keith's mate, amazing guitarist, got everything, the musicianship, the look. But then all of a sudden, a month went by, no announcement. I tried calling. It's like that under assistant West Coast promo man B-side of the Stones. I couldn't get near them. And I was frustrated. Finally, Ronnie on the phone, because he remembered me. And I opened for the Faces a bit with Grin. And he said, yeah, I turned him down. Keith's at my cottage playing with guys. And, I'm going to stay with the Faces. And of course, I didn't know him well enough to, you know, give my opinion that was not the greatest move. And he said, here, call Keith. I told him about you. Call my cottage. I dial this number after a month of not getting close to anyone. And Keith answers the phone. Couldn't be sweeter. Yeah, Ronnie won't do it. I'm tired of looking for people on my own. So the Stones are going to play with like a lot of people coming through. And we're going to decide as a band, because Ronnie says no right now. And you're welcome to come down. And I was like, why are these two heroes of mine being so nice? I mean, they're just so cool and down to earth. Oh, yeah, call Keith. I'm not doing it here. And then, sure. We're having a lot of guys come down and we're going to play as a band. Come on down and play. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Of course, nothing to do with me. I think Rod Stewart and all Ronnie's friends ganged up on him and said, dude, you belong in the Stones. Call him now and take the job. And something like that had to have gone down because shortly after he took the gig and it had nothing to do with me. But I was always taken about how kind they were. You know, fast forward, I'd written this song when called Keith Don't Go on the Tonight's the Night tour with Neil Young, mm-hmm. where we played in 73 every day. Of course, it's Neil Young. We're doing this funky, dark presentation of music no one's ever heard. And I was meeting, you know, half a dozen musicians who claimed they were Keith's best friend. They were worried about it. And it got to be on my mind. And I thought, well, they just made Exile on Main Street. He couldn't be that ill. And maybe that was naive of me, but that was my thought. However, I had this piece of music and I thought, yeah, man, Keith, you're like, you know, the sacred weapon of music. You're the caretaker. You're our hero. We need you around. And I wrote a dramatic song, Keith Don't Go, just to express my love. And, you know, encourage them to stick around. We need you selfishly and also the planet. Fast forward years later, I just was devastated when we lost Charlie Watts. I wasn't ready for it. I kept listening to Stones music and Charlie in particular, hoping his spirit would somehow help me through the rage and the sadness that he had passed. And then one morning, again, you know, sun's coming up with my dog Rose. I just this one riff. No chord changes, nothing, just one riff. I sing this blues thing about Charlie and missing him and, you know, leads to other causes. And of course, I'm saying, hey, I'm just so angry and pissed off, I'm not going to cry anymore. Then by the end of the song, I'm crying again. But love Charlie and we'll continue to miss him. But thank God for the body of work he left behind and that those beautiful musicians are still making for us.
Nils, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Manfred, I am so happy to talk to you. It's so tickled that, Steve and you all picked Ain't the Truth Enough as the coolest song. It means a lot. I'm honored. And thanks for spreading the word on my new album. Really great talking to you.
Well, we're going to give a listen now to Won't Cry No More for Charlie Watts off Neil Lofgren's latest album, Mountains. Nils Lofgren and Little Stevens, Underground Garage.
Like no bad backstage pass.
Just heard some of Won't Cry No More for Charlie Watts. That's a new tune from Nils Lofgren off his latest album, Mountains. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Nils for talking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast, the prolific prince of power pop, Kurt Baker. He's a favorite of ours in the Underground Garage. He's got a new digital single that's out on Wicked Cool Records and called Rock and Roll Club. He'll join us next time around to tell us all about it, as well as plans for his upcoming album. That's Kurt Baker on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Never known her like this
before. Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.